Hello and welcome to Taking Hugh for Granted, the podcast in which two enthusiasts watch all of Hugh Grant's seminal works, including every single movie, his greatest TV shows, and even the student film he made at university. And in this series, these Hugh Grant experts will look back at his career to create the most definitive list of the greatest Hugh Grant productions ever made. I'm Digger Waite, and I'm joined, as always, by my colleague and fellow Hugh Grant obsessive Oscar Beardmore Grey. Oscar, how the bloody hell are you doing today, mate?
I'm doing very well, Diggs. How are you, mate?
I'm great. I feel like I'm buzzing still after the last episode we did. It was a lot of fun counting down from his 50th best movie to his 41st. It was great.
I know. It was the last recording, I felt like I just wanted to run through the entire list, but we had to stop ourselves. But it's kept me the last couple of days I've just been waiting to do the next recording. So it's very exciting to run through from 40 to 30 this time around.
Exactly. And I just want to say for anyone new who's joining, go back and listen to that episode. That's how to start this journey. But just in case you're not starting this journey, you don't know the ground rules, here they are. I'll list them off very quickly. Here we go. So this list, yes, we've got his films. Obviously, Oscar and I have watched them all, but there's also some TV shows in there, some TV movies, and of course, his student film, which, spoiler alert, may come up today. We've also ranked these films on how much is Hugh in the film, how good is he in the film, how sexy is he in the film, and of course, how good the film is on its own. But remember, it's mostly about Hugh Grant. That's how me and Oscar have ranked it. I mean, Oscar, what do you think we've got in store for people today without giving them too much away? I mean, what can people expect? What do you think? They got some surprises coming up, or?
I guess these are sort of the mid-rank films. So these, I hopefully will find some good talking points, because they're sort of films that maybe people have forgotten about. Let's put it that way. They're not particularly memorable, but they're not particularly awful, particularly great. But I'm sure we'll find things to say. We've got a bit of a mix in here. We've got a few sort of ones from recent times. There's some from the back catalogue. There's some from the kind of early 2000s. So there's something for everyone here, I think.
That's a great way to sum it up, because I really feel like sometimes these middle episodes might dull. They might be a bit, they might drag, you might think. But no, they've got some great stuff in there. So we've got a couple more draws as well. There's a couple more debates. So I hope you kept your debating hat on from last week. And let's get into it with number 40 of Hugh Grant's greatest films.
40th to 31st. At number 40 in Hugh Grant's best films list, it's Death to 2021.
So Diggory, coming in at number 40, you gave it a score of 8, I gave it a score of 10.5, for a grand total of 18.5 out of 40. It's Death to 2021. Talk to me.
Wow, Death to 2021. Well, this was the sequel, I suppose, to Death to 2020, which is sort of a mockumentary talking head style thing, where it's like a look back at the year that's just been and saying, damn it, death to it. It's interesting because to talk about Death 2021 before we talk about Death 2020, because I feel like this felt like, we all know that 2020 was a terrible year. And, you know, that so that film, where basically it's just a film dunking on 2020, was great. 2021 obviously wasn't great, but it just felt a bit overkill for me, this film. But we should probably talk about Hugh. I mean, so I just want to get off the bat there and say, for me, it wasn't the best film in the world. It was fine. But what about you? What did you think of it? And what did you think of Hugh?
Yeah, I think you're right, Diggs. It's hard not to talk about this film in the context of Death to 2020, which, spoiler alert, may come up in the episode. I think undoubtedly it was a sort of failed reboot of Death to 2020. The first one was kind of original. No one was really expecting it. It just dropped on our doorstep on Netflix when we're all sort of like in a bad way in 2020. Death to 2021 was, it felt like maybe it was like the kind of thing where Netflix had like commissioned 2020 and they were like, oh, go on then, make 2021. And while Hugh Grant's character, Tennyson Foss, was a very funny and original take, well, maybe not original, but a funny take on kind of like that stuffy English historian who is anti-woke or whatever you want to call it. After 2021 just fell a little bit short, didn't it?
Yeah, it did. I think unlike the first one, there are a few characters in there that didn't quite, they weren't funny enough. The year itself wasn't as horrible enough. What I will say, last thing I will say on this is there were some great lines in there. Like you say, this very anti-woke guy, he says, I don't do pronouns. I don't have any pronouns. I don't dance the wokey-cokey, which I think I need to start getting that into my everyday speech. Because as you know, we were on holiday together recently and you guys kept being like, you're part of the wokerati, you're so woke. And I want to be like, no, I don't dance the wokey-cokey.
I don't know if you can be considered part of the wokerati if you have a Hugh Grant podcast, Diggs.
That's true. Especially after this whole him being cast as an Oompa Loompa. People keep saying to me, oh, what do you think about Hugh Grant at the moment being cast as an Oompa Loompa? He's been cancelled. And I'm like, what's going on? What? Oh, thank you, Double Woke Seven. Well done for coming at me with one of those.
Duking it out for 39th and 38th spot is Operation Fortune, Ruse de Guerre, and Crossing the Line, also known as The Big Man.
Well, Oscar, what do we have here? Another tiebreaker. Battling it out for 39th and 38th, we have Crossing the Line, 1990, otherwise known as The Big Man, and Operation Fortune, Ruse de Guerre, released in 2023. Oscar, can you tell me maybe first? Well, tell me what you think about both of them, and then maybe tell me which one you'd like to put above of the other.
Mm. I feel like pitting these two films together is kind of hilarious. It's like, on the one hand, you've got Operation Fortune, which is like this glitz, glam, high drama, thriller, Jason Statham throwing punches and kicks at everyone. And then you got Crossing the Line, which is like Liam Neeson basically bare knuckling. Like kicking the shit out of people. Like, it's yeah. Like this very like simplistic, you know, one man drama versus like, you know, all the bells and whistles going off in Operation Fortune.
Mm.
So you couldn't really come up with two different films in that sense. In terms of Hugh Grant, I feel like Operation Fortune maybe comes in higher just because Hugh Grant's not really in Crossing the Line that much. Like, in Crossing the Line, he's basically in it for, like, one scene, effectively. He's playing, like, a kind of Scottish doctor. He puts on another accent, guys. This one actually wasn't as bad, but, like, it's still, you know, red flag when he's putting on an accent.
Yeah.
I have more affinity towards Crossing the Line. I want to put Crossing the Line at 38, just because there's something so authentic about this film. Just Liam Neeson, Liam Neeson is literally just like, you know, he's a man mountain boxer who just goes around. Like, there's this 7-minute fight scene where he is literally like just blood coming out of his face, his opponent's face. It's like brutal.
It's horrible.
So I'm going to squeeze Crossing the Line in 38th. What did you think?
Oh, Oscar, I'm so pleased. I'm so pleased. I feel like we clearly share this because, honestly, Crossing the Line, aka The Big Man, yes, Hugh Grant's not in it for long. And I think probably the reason why his accent's not so bad is because he doesn't have to do it for a whole film. Usually his accents drop off halfway through the film and he defaults back to either English or weirdly goes American. It's really odd. But the film as well, it's quite funny. The subject matter is so dark, but I remember thinking it was really funny. And, you know, I guess the only problem is there's not enough Hugh. On the other side of that, Operation Fortune, if you listen to that, it's quite a recent episode of ours, if you listen to it, I hate it with an absolute passion. It is, if I could shove this higher up this list, aka, you know, in the 40s, I would. I really, really despise this film. It is the ultimate culprit of tell, don't show. You know, films are there to show you. They are a medium, they're a visual medium. So why is every scene, just every character explaining what's happening to you? It's so boring and rubbish. I really hate it. Hugh Grant is the saving grace of that film. So please, I agree with you. Operation Fortune, let's stick that at 39 and let's keep Crossing the Line, aka The Big Man, with Liam Neeson, The Big Man, stalking around the boxing ring, beating men to a pulp. Let's have that at 38.
Yeah, I feel like if we were doing a Liam Neeson podcast or someone was doing a Liam Neeson podcast, Crossing the Line would be one of those like gem films that makes it into the top 10. Like, that is the kind of film we're talking about. So like, you know, I would actually watch Crossing the Line again, whereas I wouldn't watch Operation Fortune again. So I think it's coming in at 38th.
Quite right.
Wrestling for control of 37th and 36th place will be Did You Hear About the Morgans and Small Time Crooks.
All right then, Diggs, we settled that first debate. Time for another tiebreaker. For position 36th and 37th in our grand list. Battling out this time, we have Small Time Crooks from the year 2000. And Did You Hear About the Morgans from 2009? Where are your thoughts at on this one?
Well, Did You Hear About the Morgans? I've got a few notes written down here. You know, Hugh, we said in our podcast about it, Hugh's not looking good. It's one of these, you know, it's unfortunate. He's maybe looking a little bit old, you know, and he said this is a problem. He plays alongside Sarah Jessica Parker in the film. And, you know, they play this sort of divorced couple and I think they witness a murder or something. They go into witness protection. It's meant to be like a rom-com, right? And it's with Mark Lawrence, who you guys might end up hearing a lot about from us, because they Hugh and Mark Lawrence team up for a lot of rom-coms. Mark Lawrence is like a director-writer guy. It's not a good screenplay. It's not a good film. Sarah Jessica Parker and Hugh Grant were good friends off screen. And Hugh Grant said, being friends off screen doesn't make good chemistry on screen. I think we saw that with this film. It's not that great. Small Time Crooks, also an interesting director, is Woody Allen, since cancelled. It's kind of interesting. It's a very, you know, let's be honest, it's kind of interesting for Hugh in that sense. Hugh wears flip-flops and a cravat at one point. He's meant to be teaching some of the characters about grace and decorum. He oddly plays it quite straight, whereas other characters in this are like completely crazy. But what I would say about that is, there's this bit at the beginning where Small Time Crooks, they're basically these crooks. They buy... yeah, they're these crooks. But basically, they buy this, like, I don't know, this shop that's a few doors down from a bank. They decide to, like, in the basement of the shop, they're like, right, we'll dig under the shops into the bank and we'll steal the money that way. But they have to, like, create a facade, and they sell cookies in the shop. Anyway, the cookie shop does amazingly, and the crooks downstairs who are trying to, like, get their way through underground and dig a tunnel are complete fools. And there's an amazing scene where they break a water pipe in the wall, and they're all falling about, and the you know, the basement's filling out with water. It's really funny. The first 30 minutes of this film is like your favorite sitcom. It's brilliant. I think both of them are in right places in this list. So I would put Small Time Crooks personally at 36, and I would put Did You Hear About the Morgans at 37, because, yeah, Small Time Crooks just has a bit more about it. It's funnier for me. And Hugh Grant, you know, he wears flip-flops and a cravat, Oscar.
Oh, I don't know whether I'm totally convinced by that argument, Diggs. I mean, I don't think this is the hill I want to die on at this point. You know, we've got a lot more films to go. So I will heed to your request to put Small Time Crooks above Did You Hear About the Morgans. I mean, ultimately, guys, these are two pretty average films. I think, Diggs, you're bang on. At this point in his career in Did You Hear About the Morgans, both just Sarah Jessica Parker and himself, they're too old to be doing rom-coms. They're like, they're kind of like, by this point, probably in their late 40s, it's like this kind of like mum and dad tension, which is just so boring. There are a couple of saving graces, like Hugh in this movie fights a grizzly bear, which is entertaining. Small Time Crooks is just, it's not my type of film, let's put it that way. It's like very like, plays into this kind of like New York kind of slapstick comedy type film, where there's like, you know, basically Woody Allen and Tracy Ullman who plays Frenchie, the two main characters, are sort of at each other's necks the entire film with this kind of like ongoing dialogue, and I just found it bloody tiring. It's like, it was just like piercing. But I think that you're right, probably, that Hugh Grant's character is more unique in Small Time Crooks than it is in Did You Hear About the Morgans. Like, Did You Hear About the Morgans is like the same old rubbish. Small Time Crooks, he's kind of like playing this like quite classy art dealer, which, interestingly enough, he reprises in Mickey Blue Eyes a couple years later. So I will come with you, Diggs. I'm coming to your side. Let's put Small Time Crooks at 36th and Did You Hear About the Morgans at 37th.
In at number 35 is Glass Onion, a Knives Out mystery.
So, Oscar, at 35, here's a very interesting one. Glass Onion, a Knives Out mystery, 2022. Tell me how this got here.
I sort of feel bad when, like, a Hugh Grant cameo of less than a minute manages to come in front of a film where he was, like, literally the main star, which probably says something about Hugh Grant. I don't know if it's recency bias, because let's be honest, Glass Onion was a terrible film as well. So the fact that it's coming in 35th, you gave it 9.5 out of 20, and I gave it 11. So a little bit of discrepancy there. So Glass Onion came out in 2022. It's a murder mystery starring Daniel Craig, who does an even more dodgy American accent than Hugh in Our Sons. And Hugh, it's a bit like in our last episode, if you listen to it, in Housewarming to Revote, where Hugh is as cameo as you get, isn't he? Like, he's in there for 30 seconds. What would you say his character is like? He's kind of like, he's just come out of the bath and he is meant to be Daniel Craig's lover. Is that correct?
Well, I think it's actually Daniel Craig's in the bath and Hugh Grant comes out in a little apron.
Yeah.
And he's like baking something, and then he just answers the door and he's like, oh, someone else here for Daniel Craig, my husband, I guess.
Yes, I remember.
You know, and yeah, I mean, like you say, it's a damn, I don't want to dwell on this point too much, but my word, is this a damning indictment on Hugh Grant? Because, I mean, what is he says a line, and yet this film is somehow 35th in his all-time film. I'm not sure what else to say. I thought the film was pretty not great. I really liked his, and like you say about Truffaut, in Truffaut, this short cameo, he's meant to be really like sexy and cool. And I guess in this, he's meant to be billed as anything as sexy. It's just meant to be maybe the surprise. It's like, oh, Daniel Craig's character's gay. Nice. Like, that's sort of it.
Yeah. I think we're trying our best in this whole list to not let recency bias kind of hamper us too much. And I think you see that through Operation Fortune being in 38. We had Cloud Atlas, who was number 49. But maybe there's a little bit of that where, like, just because of, like, the entertainment value, the fact that Glass Onion came out on Netflix and, like, everyone watched it, it's the same as Death to 2021, where maybe there's a bit of us which is like, you know, that was just fun for a night compared to, like, sitting through 3 hours of, like, Champagne Charlie on, like, a Tuesday night in December. You know,
well,
like,
but then, you know, listen, guys, Champagne Charlie's yet to come up. Loads of people won't know what that is. That is, you're going to be excited to hear about that film. That is a good one.
Like, that's it's two way episodes up there. Away.
Yeah, exactly. It's an absolute buzz.
In 34th, it's Death to 2020.
Right, Diggs, we had Death to 2021, and as I alluded to earlier in the episode,
you did.
6 places above it at number 34 is Death to 2020.
Yes. I mean, we've sort of said a lot of it already. I mean, I think with this film, Death to 2020, this was, like you say, it was novel, much like the novel coronavirus that it spent so much time talking about. But yeah, it was this fun, you know, talking heads look back at the year and saying, you know, wasn't it terrible? I mean, in some ways, my issue with this, well, actually, I want to talk about the best thing about it. Tennyson Foss, like we said before, Hugh Grant, the makeup, he looks brilliant, he sounds brilliant, he acts fantastically, he plays this David Starkey piss take, you know, old fogey historian who hates the wokearty, who hates everything like that. It's delicious. And whenever he was on screen, I really, really enjoyed it. Genuinely, I thought he was excellent. My issue, I suppose, is that Death of 2020, you know, 2020 was a terrible year. It was an open goal. We all were making jokes about how terrible that year was. So it could only really mess up, I think, you know. And one of the big mess ups for me was Hugh Grant's character. There was this really weird thing where they kept making this joke where Tennyson Foss would be like, oh, yes, and the novel Coronavirus is on the way. That reminded me of when in Westeros, when the White Walkers were coming. And the guy's like, oh, isn't that Game of Thrones? He's like, nope, this is history. I'm talking about history here. And it just, that joke just didn't hit the mark. And they did that joke again in 2021.
Yeah, when they really said, hammed up the Game of Thrones jokes, and it just was like, it was terrible. Like,
it was awful.
Even if you're a Game of Thrones fan, I think most people were like, all right, are we done with this one yet?
Yeah, it was. Yeah, it was just a joke that didn't land. I think there was a lot of. I mean, it was the same in 2021. There was a few jokes in there that were just quite childish, didn't quite land, didn't quite hit. And I suppose that was the detraction from the film. But I'd just say again, I think the character of Tennyson Foss is brilliant. I think the performance from Hugh Grant is great. So, you know, it's a fine maximum 3-star film. That could be, the longer it goes on, quite a fun trip down memory lane, you know, to remind us about how shit that year really was.
Yeah. Look, Diggs, I'm going to just call you out because I feel like... call you out. I feel like you need to be called out.
Yeah, please,
I just feel like... look, you've given this film 9 out of 20. I give it 13. I just feel like this is the classic movie or like Netflix special that someone like you has an issue with. Like, I think that this film is not meant to be like criticized or like looked into, investigated as much as we've done. I think it's very surface level. Like you say, it was an open goal. We were all depressed and sad in 2020. You know, we were looking for some entertainment at Christmas, and it was provided to us. It was provided to us where we could all just sit there and be like, oh, thank God the year's over. And we get to see Hugh Grant, you know, with a new kind of character that we've never seen before. So I think actually we've been a bit harsh here. That's what I'm going to say. I think this could be higher. I think this film could be higher. And I've read a lot of reviews in the last couple of days when preparing for this episode where it was like Death to 2020 wasn't a slam dunk, but Hugh Grant was great. And so the fact that you put it as a 9 out of 20, I think is shocking. There's other films. There's Restoration. There's Night Train to Venice and Our Sons. You've ranked higher in your ranking than this one. I think that's appalling.
Do you know what? This is so fair. I do. When you put it like that, I need flagellating. There's no other word for it. I need absolute flagellating. Like, there's no way that it beats Glass Onion by one. And like you say, there's no way that it's, you know, yeah, I can't rank Restoration did have a good start, though. What were the other two films you mentioned there? I don't know what it is.
Night Train to Venice, you ranked higher than this.
It can't be worse than Night Train. But the thing is, hang on, remember with the rankings, though, that we're ranking them, you know, how much is Hugh in it? And, well, then again, he's in it quite a lot in Night Train to Venice. So that's why I might have rated it higher. So it might be the
excuses,
ranking system
mate.
We did.
It's useless.
Oh, I don't believe this.
33rd is Privileged.
Oscar, here we go. Coming in at 33rd is Privileged, 1982. And I'm sure it is an absolute privilege for you to talk about this film. Take the floor.
Oh, where do I start with this one, Dave? So this, as many of you will know, Privileged was Hugh Grant's first ever film credit. In fact, it was so early on in his career. He was at university, and his credit was Huey Grant. He was still known
Amazing.
As Huey.
Yeah.
That in itself is brilliant.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's a student production. It's not going to be high-class cinematography. You know, there's going to be mistakes, a few holes in it. Overall, I thought that this is a pretty good effort. And the fact that it comes in at 33rd out of 50 and beats a whole swathe of films before it, given that it was literally put on by a bunch of teenagers, I think is a pretty good effort. So, yeah, I mean, again, you gave it 10. I gave it 12.5. So, Mr. Harsh Critic over there, tell me what you liked about this film, because I feel like everything is like, my issue with this film.
I love this so much. I feel like, you know, if we were Pop Idol or if we were X Factor, I'm Simon Cowell and
yes,
my trousers
Louis
are
Walsh.
Up by my... Yeah, you're like, he looks like a pop star. He sings like a pop star. I think Hugh Grant's amazing. Whereas I'm like, well, my issue with the film was thus.
Yes.
You're absolutely right. Well, you're so right.
Look, you need your Jekyll and Hyde, don't you?
It's true.
You need your Simon Cowell and your Louis Walsh. So I'll... Give me all your reasons why you hated this film.
Well, no, do you know what? I wanted to say, obviously, this is a huge part, role in Hugh Grant's career. You know, there was a woman called Victoria Stubbs who actually, we have some degrees of separation with your dad knows Victoria Stubbs. listen to the episode to, yeah, well, we'll see. But listen to the full episode to find out more about that. But Hugh Grant didn't want to do this film. And then someone was like, "Oh, Victoria Stubbs in it." He was like, "Well, she's fit. I'll do it then." And then he was spotted by agents, and they were like, "You should really give this acting thing a go." So this film started it all. We just, I think, you know, that's when you think about it. And you know what? When I listen back to your episode, I remember when I watched the film, I was like, you know, I had an issue with this, I had an issue with that. But at the same time, you just said to me, you grabbed me by the scruff of the neck, figuratively, and you said, "Diggory, this is a student production. This is a student film. And this is more watchable than half the fucking dross that we've watched." And I was like, you know what? You're absolutely goddamn right. Like, I suppose my issues now with it, because it's watchable, you know, my issues now is that he's not in the film enough. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I would say this starts, you know, his early career as well, which is just films over and over again, where films that he plays lords in country homes. He plays a lord in this as well.
He's very good at that.
And films that are slightly sex obsessed. You know, his early career is just sexy, sexy movies. And this is one of them as well. There's some weird sex stuff that goes on in here. And, you know, his feeble character and his acting is great. And I feel like I've really marked it lowly. But, you know, it might be down to our ranking system. It might be down to the fact that he's not in it enough. This film, you know, to be fair, I don't think for this film, his first ever film, a student production, that 33rd is that bad. It's done a really... So, you know, I've only got good things to say about it.
I mean, I feel like, Diggs, the bottom line is this was the start, as you say. And, you know, if you're making a documentary about Hugh Grant's career, which I know there have been already, but, you know, it's a bit like where you get the archive of Hugh Grant when he was in Sound of Music singing and some, like, talking head being like, "Hugh Grant loves acting when he was a little kid and he was in Sound of Music." And then it's like, and then when Hugh Grant went to the University of Oxford, he stumbled across this film called Privilege, and that's where it all began. You know,
like, yeah, exactly.
This is the moment that catapults him towards showbiz and acting. And yeah, if it wasn't for him fancying some girl, then we might not have got all the films that we're talking about in this list.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
or I think just respect. Nothing but respect for Privilege. Comes in a
nothing
33rd.
But respect. Yeah.
Fighting for 32nd and 31st spot in the ultimate list of Hugh Grant's greatest films, it's The Rewrite and White Mischief.
All right, Diggs. Well, I can't believe we're nearly already at the end of this episode. We've rattled through our list from 40 to 30. So we have one final tiebreaker to decide which film is 32nd and which film is 31st on our list. It's between, again, two quite different films. We have White Mischief from 1987, which is one of the very first films that we reviewed, and The Rewrite in 2014. What sticks out for you from these two, and where are you ranking them?
Well, Oscar. Well. All I'll say is, well, so The Rewrite, we've mentioned once in this episode, Mark Lawrence, the writer-director, and Hugh Grant team up again. Oscar's shaking his head, and quite right.
It's just crap.
This film, so, you know, Hugh Grant plays an Oscar-winning screenwriter who's down his luck, isn't getting any work anymore, so he goes to Binghamton or something in New York. I don't know. He goes to some university and teaches kids there, but he's this sort of drunk guy. He sleeps with his students. You know,
it's a bit creepy, really.
It's a bit creepy. And this is the thing. That was probably one of my main issues with the film, is it didn't take itself seriously enough. Like, this guy is like a drunk who sleeps with his students. They could have taken that a bit more seriously and it would have been an interesting film. Whereas this is packaged as some fluffy, fun rom-com. No, that's not cool what you're doing.
It's actually like, even 8 years later, like, this I don't think would be made. Where it's basically like kind of saying that sleeping with your students, being drunk at work, only choosing female good-looking women to be in your class is like something that's okay.
Yeah, or even funny. Like, it's not funny. It's just not funny. And if it took itself more seriously, I would have taken it more seriously. Hugh, of course, is good in the film. He knows how to act these films. He knows how to tell these jokes, all that sort of stuff. But the film doesn't help itself. You mean, there's loads of cliches. Do you remember the fucking Star Wars guy? There's a character in it who just is obsessed with Star Wars, this weird little nerd. He keeps being all of his... Basically, every film he writes or everything he writes for his creative writing class just happens to basically be Star Wars. There's this depressed girl in it who's... Like, that's her whole thing. She can't write anything that's happy. There's this weird... And then she's sat next to this really, really weird happy girl who's like happy, like weirdly happy. And it's so funny. And ironically, it's a terrible screenplay. And Oscar, you put it best in our episode when you said, this film needs a rewrite. And I can't agree more. So just to give you a little, you know, I think I would definitely put this film at 32nd rather than 31st, unlike White Mischief. But I want to hear your thoughts on White Mischief or the rewrite before I go off on one, because I could talk about White Mischief for ages.
Yeah, well, I mean, I don't think there's too much to add on the rewrite. You know, basically 2014, this is basically the end of Hugh Grant's traditional rom-com character. This is the point where finally he's kind of like pushed beyond into the you're too old to do rom-com category. So as you can imagine, like anything, like it's tired. It's a tired act where Mark Lawrence is sort of like desperately clinging on to Hugh's looks that are slightly going by this point. And yeah, I think this is actually worse than Did You Hear About the Morgans, but somehow it's higher in our rankings. Mm-hmm. Why Mischief, on the other hand, I actually think is actually kind of class. I was reminding myself of what it was about yesterday, and it's just so random. It's about this group of like aristocrats in Kenya.
Yes. Yes.
Like basically, you know, back in the day when the British Empire was still at its height, if you were kind of the black sheep of a colonial family, you basically sent off to Kenya for like a while, and basically anything that you weren't able to do in London, which like sleeping with prostitutes, I mean, they probably still were able to do this, but it was basically debauchery in Kenya. It was based on this scandal that happened where there was like a murder and it was sort of remained a bit unsolved. But I think the premise of that film was far more entertaining than, and I don't want to say original, but it was just like one of those films which when you watched, you sort of stood up and or sat up in your chair and you're like, oh, this is kind of an interesting premise.
Absolutely. I could not agree more. It transports you into this world that I had no idea about. And it's one of those films that makes you go, fuck, I've got to Google that. And you Google it and you're like, oh my God. And you go on a bit of a like Wikipedia spiral and you're clicking on that and you're like, oh my God. Like the more and more you learn about it, the more you're like, I can't believe it, because it's based on a true story. I think it's a genuine unsolved mystery about this place where they would go to Kenya, as they call it, and they had this sort of weird colony out there of all these
it's like a cult.
But I suppose then we should sidestep to talk about, you know, Hugh Grant's role in this film, which is very interesting because he has 8 lines and we counted, he's on screen for about 1 minute and 27 seconds. He is basically this person's partner at the beginning of the film, and then she's going to go to Kenya to marry, and he's like, don't go, there's hyenas. But she's like, I'm going to go anyway, and he's sort of like, it's sad because he's sort of in love with her, I think. And you sort of think that maybe at the end of the film, he might come back and be like, no, I do love you. He's just never seen again. So it was kind of sad because Hugh Grant is only a cameo in this film. But again, there's a country house. He plays an upper class guy. And this film is fraught with sex. You see Charles Dance's pubes. You see naked ladies. You see at the end of the film where, spoiler alert, I'll pause for them to leave, Charles Dance is in a morgue. All the women in this town fancy him. A woman touches herself and wipes it over his dead face. And this man watching on is like, no, please, no, not possible. It's like trying to get her to stop. And all the other women who are watching in there are like nodding their heads, being like, that's it. She owns him now. She won him. It's crazy. It's nuts. And it's fucking brilliant. This film would be higher up on this list if Hugh Grant was in it more. If Hugh played the Charles Dance role, Oscar, hear me out here, it would be top 10. It would be top fucking 10.
I agree. I was about to say that if he had a bigger role, it would be up there. It would be like Lair of the White Worm levels, yeah. I feel like.
Yeah.
I think also, just to quickly finish off here, I think watching this movie was the point where we realized what we got ourselves in for.
That's so true.
This was like the fifth or sixth film that we watched. And as Diggory mentioned, there was only 8 lines of Hugh Grant in this film. So we watched an entire movie and spent by the end of watching the movie, recording the episode, editing the episode, we probably spent 10 hours or something this for 8 lines of Hugh. So I think it was at that moment we were like, all right, there's going to be a lot of films like this, aren't there?
And
best you believe there were. So yeah. I'm really happy that we decided, I think, that this one is going to be 31st, White Mischief. And I just wish he was in it more, because it would have been up there.
Oh, it would have been straight up there. So, Oscar, there was a great question you asked me last week, and I'm going to ask you the same question now. If you had to stick one of these films in the DVD player right now and watch the whole thing, what would it be?
That's tough. I think it would be White Mischief.
I mean, it's going to have to be, isn't it?
yeah. We've just picked it up so badly. But you know what?
It's class.
It's been a while since we watched it now, and it's so crazy. I love
it. It's crazy. It's great. It's great. So this, guys, listening at home, this is your reason. This is to go and watch White Mischief. It is absolutely class. And it's got quite a good cast as well. Like I say, Charles Dance's in it. I mean, you can't really be that. Hugh Grant, for God's sake. Mate, Oscar, it's been an absolute pleasure yet again. This is so much fun. I love doing this.
I know. I want to do this every day.
I know. I wish you had 100 films, because I want to keep doing this. I'll just keep going. Maybe one day you will. Who knows? Guys, thank you so much, everyone, for listening as well and tuning in, wherever you're tuning in. Please follow us on the social medias. We're at Taking Hugh on Twitter. We're X, formerly known as Twitter. We're at Taking Hugh for Granted on Facebook and Instagram. Guys, get in touch. Let us know. Are we making the wrong decisions here? Let us know what you think should be higher up. I'm sure you guys have a lot of thoughts when we get for 10 to 1. But guess what? That's not coming yet. What's coming next is 30 to 21st. And I'm so excited.
I'm so excited. We're going to have some interesting debates. I'm not going to lift the lid too much on what we got coming up. But we have got a film that I don't like and you love that has fallen
a bit.
So we can look forward to a good old debate about that.
Exactly. Expect next week's episode to be at least an hour and a half where we just duke it out. Oh, I can't wait. Everyone, tune in for that. If that's not a cliffhanger, if that's not something that's going to bring you back and make you subscribe and follow wherever you're listening to this podcast now, listening to this podcast now, and then I don't know what will. I don't know what will, but I guess we'll have to wait for next time. Oscar, thank you so much, and we'll see you all very soon.
It's been a pleasure. Thanks, Diggs.